They might also be joined by Hollywood and other entertainment workers. All of them are huge beneficiaries of the flat world. They might be called the Web Party, whose main platform would be to promote more global integration. In short, in a flat world, we are likely to see many social liberals, white-collar global service industry workers, and Wall Street types driven together, and many social conservatives, white-collar local service industry workers, and labor unions driven together. More and more, politics in the flat world will consist of asking which values, frictions, and fats are worth preserving, which should, in Marx's language, be kept solid, and which must be left to melt away into the air. Countries, companies, and individuals will be able to give intelligent answers to these questions only if they understand the real nature and texture of the global playing field and how different it is from the one that existed in the Cold War era and before. And countries, companies, and individuals will be able to make sound political choices only if they fully appreciate the flattened playing field and understand all the new tools now available to them for collaborating and competing on it. I hope this audio program will provide a nuanced framework for this hugely important political debate and the great sorting out that is just around the corner. Brace yourself. You are now about to enter the flat world. America and the flat world. America and free trade. Is Ricardo still right? As an American who has always believed in the merits of free trade, I had an important question to answer after my India trip. Should I still believe in free trade in a flat world? I know that free trade won't necessarily benefit every American, and that our society will have to help those who are harmed by it. But for me, the key question was, will free trade benefit America as a whole when the world becomes so flat and so many more people can collaborate and compete with my kids? It seems that so many jobs are going to be up for grabs. Wouldn't individual Americans be better off if our government erected some walls and banned some outsourcing and offshoring? I first wrestled with this issue while filming the Discovery Times documentary in Bangalore. One day we went to the Infosys campus around 5 p.m., just when the Infosys call center workers were flooding into the grounds for the overnight shift on foot, minibus, and motor scooter. The crew and I were standing at the gate observing this river of educated young people flowing in and out, many in animated conversation. They all looked as if they had scored 1600 on their SATs, and I felt a real mind-eye split overtaking me. My mind just kept telling me, Ricardo is right, Ricardo is right, Ricardo is right. David Ricardo, 1772 to 1823, was the English economist who developed the free trade theory of comparative advantage, which stipulates that if each nation specializes in the production of goods in which it has a comparative cost advantage and then trades with other nations for the goods in which they specialize, there will be an overall gain in trade, and overall income levels should rise in each trading country. And one can see evidence of this mutual benefit in the sharp increase in exports and imports between the United States and India in recent years. Having listened to the arguments on both sides, though, I come down where the great majority of economists come down, that Ricardo is still right, and that more American individuals will be better off if we don't erect barriers to outsourcing, supply chaining, and offshoring than if we do. The main argument of the anti-outsourcing school is that in a flat world, not only are goods tradable, but many services have become tradable as well. Because of this change, America and other developed countries could be headed for an absolute decline, not just a relative one, in their economic power and living standards unless they move to formally protect certain jobs from foreign competition. So many new players cannot enter the global economy, in service and knowledge fields now dominated by the Americans, Europeans, and Japanese, without wages settling at a newer, lower equilibrium, this school argues. The main counterargument from free trade slash outsourcing advocates is that while there may be a transition phase in certain fields, during which wages are dampened, there is no reason to believe that this dip will be permanent or across the board, as long as the global pie keeps growing. To suggest that it will be is to invoke the so-called lump of labor theory, the notion that there is a fixed lump of labor in the world and that once that lump is gobbled up by either Americans or Indians or Japanese, there won't be any more jobs to go around. The main reason the lump of labor theory is wrong is that it is based on the assumption that everything that is going to be invented has been invented, and that therefore economic competition is a zero-sum game, a fight over a fixed lump. This assumption misses the fact that although jobs are often lost in bulk to outsourcing or offshoring by big individual companies, and this loss tends to make headlines, new jobs are also being created in fives, tens, and twenties by small companies that you can't see. It often takes a leap of faith to believe that it is happening, but it is happening. The reason it is happening is that as lower-end service and manufacturing jobs move out of Europe, America, and Japan to India, China, and the former Soviet Empire, the global pie not only grows larger because more people have more income to spend, it also grows more complex as more new jobs and new specialties are created. The pie keeps growing because things that look like wants today are needs tomorrow, argued Marc Andreessen, the Netscape co-founder, who helped to ignite a whole new industry, e-commerce, that now employs millions of specialists around the world, specialists whose jobs weren't even imagined when Bill Clinton became president. I like going to coffee shops occasionally, but now that Starbucks is here, I need my coffee. And that new need has spawned a whole new industry. I always wanted to be able to search for things, but once Google was created, I must have my search engine. So a whole new industry has been built up around search, and Google is hiring math PhDs by the bushel before Yahoo or Microsoft hires them. People are always assuming that everything that is going to be invented must have been invented already, but it hasn't.